From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Welcome to episode number 168, where I am joined by extraordinary man, Dr. Tro Kalyan. Dr. Tro is a board-certified internal medicine and obesity medicine physician, who is the medical director and founder of Dr. Tro's Medical Weight Loss and Direct Primary Care in Tappan, New York. Dr. Tro's therapeutic focus includes diabetes, obesity, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, metabolic syndrome, and PCOS. His approach is informed not only by the medical literature, but his own experience losing 150 pounds, or 68 kilograms, on a ketogenic diet. His intensive lifestyle changes for patients include diet, exercise, improved sleep hygiene, as well as stress management and mental health. Dr. Tro is also the co-founder and co-host of the Low Carb MD podcast. I hope you enjoy this week's episode. Welcome, Dr. Tro, to the Keto Woman podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm excited. I was talking with Amy Aegis and she said you have to go and chat with her. So here we are. She's, if everybody doesn't know, Amy's an amazing person, lost over 200 pounds and a health coach here. And she struggled with weight loss her whole life. And she's the one, she said to me, look, Tro, you have to go on her podcast. You have to go. So we made it happen and here we are. I'm so happy to meet you. So delighted to meet you.
You too, Amy. Yes, I'm another super big fan of Amy. She's fantastic. The recording I did with her was brilliant. I enjoyed it so much and the listeners did too.
Yeah. Well, I think one, the story of, you know, look, her story, everybody can relate to. Mm. The bottom line is trapped in obesity. She had no deficiency of doctors, nutritionists, support, love. She had it all. Right?
That's right.
How is it that the medical system could have failed somebody like her and failed somebody like me for so long, despite her best efforts? right? And that's what me and her and Brian Wiley, that's what we're fighting against, is this system that somehow took no ownership and basically blamed the victim when it comes to obesity. And so, you know, her story of triumph and tenacity, I think it's just, it's absolutely amazing. She's an amazing person.
She is, and she must be a hugely valuable asset to your team, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you've struggled with obesity and you failed every diet, I mean, it's funny, we joke all the time, you know, who's failed more diets, me or her, you know? We joke that we could break any diet. You know, we're so good at understanding our appetite and understanding what leads humans to eat, whether it's macronutrients, composition of food or food combinations or tastes and or its hormones or blood sugar fluctuations or stress or social situations or, you know, deep-seated emotional issues, whatever the cause is, right? Me and Amy joke around and say, we've figured out a way to break every diet.
I can relate to that.
Yeah. But that's valuable, right?
Imagine
if you're somebody, you know, and, you know, that's why people come to us. Yeah. Yes. We focus on low carb. You know, here I am, I'm an internist and I'm board certified in internal medicine. I got board certification in obesity medicine. I was obese my whole life, you know, and ended up going down a rabbit hole of nutrition and I guess diet and weight loss literature in the medical field and the scientific field. And you realize, wait a second, you know, like what's actually in the literature is the exact opposite from what we're telling everybody. Mm. And so, you know, I went through my own journey and connected with Amy a couple of years ago. And, you know, we decided like she had to join this practice, you know. She had to join and we got her on. She became a certified health coach. And Brian Wiley, also one of our, he's been doing Atkins and low carb for 12 years, you know, after struggling for obesity. He's another health coach. And so we all kind of put our heads together and said, how are we going to make a difference? And so we've been in this medical practice in New York and we're helping people basically escape obesity. And become, we joke, we call it, you know, it's kind of like breaking out of the obesity jail. You know, we're making obesity parolees because you can't ever escape. And if you know anything about dieting and weight loss, if you struggle with obesity, you know, there's a way to lose at any diet. Anyway, so she's an amazing person and we have an amazing team here. And we've been doing, you know, obesity medicine and weight loss from a hormonal standpoint, from a glycemic standpoint, from a mental health standpoint, from a stress management standpoint, and from a highly integrated technologic standpoint, I really should say. We are giving patients scales in their homes, blood pressure cuffs in their homes, continuous glucose monitors, ketone meters, and all of this links directly to our office. Mm. So they use it at home.
Mm, fantastic.
We follow along and we guide them throughout the process and reach out when we're worried about how things look and encourage them when things are looking great. And it's a new way of practicing medicine. And we're, you know, we're excited. We're excited about the future.
Yeah, it sounds great. And who best to go to than somebody who's struggled themselves, somebody who continues to struggle? I know Amy in particular, when I was talking to her, she's very humble and, like a lot of us, suffers from imposter syndrome and is worried about, you know, that, well, nonsensical, actually, feeling that you have to be perfect before you can help people. You know, maybe there are some people out there, they're the kind of people they like to go to. But certainly for me, if I need help with something, the person I want to go to is somebody who's had the same problems or similar problems I have and has started figuring out how to solve them, probably is still struggling with them. That's fine. That's what I think anyway is really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, imagine being stuck. I mean, this is a metaphor I use often. Imagine being stuck in the matrix and going and talking to the agents. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no matrix. You're fine. Just do as you're told. Yeah. You know, that would be the equivalent of being an obese person and going to a conventional nutritionist and doctor. Mm. Right? Like they don't even understand obesity. They don't get it. When you go to these conferences, and I've been to them all, and they hate me at all of these conferences.
That's a good sign.
And I'm not kidding. Okay. They hate me at all of these conferences. And I'll tell you why. because they get up on their podiums and they present massive dioramas, okay, with genetics, air conditioning, and video games, and television, and, you know, calorie labels, and, you know, all these different causes of obesity. They don't like me because I think they're all a bunch of BS. I remember at one of these meetings, I politely raised my hand and I said, do any of you pay attention to the veterinary literature on obesity? And they looked around and not really, you know, like this is a conference on obesity in humans, you know. I said, well, there's an interesting study that was recently published, and this was like 2 years ago, that showed that raccoons around the city versus raccoons around the suburbs versus the raccoons in the farmlands. If you look at the raccoons in the city, they are obese, diabetic, have arthritis and fatty liver. These poor researchers, veterinary researchers, actually went and biopsied them and did labs on these, you know, raccoons. And if you look at the raccoons in the suburbs, they're overweight, pre-diabetic, you know, and not as much arthritis, but still a little there. And then if you go into the country, in the farmlands, they're perfectly healthy raccoons. And I said, do you, any of you know if they're playing too much video games? And I said, do any of you know if there's an issue with their air conditioning or cars or lack of exercise? Should they be using their MyFitnessPal better? Should they join a gym? Should we start gyms for these raccoons? And they, you know, politely asked me to settle down. They said, if I don't like this kind of conference, I don't need to come. And, you know, this is the state of weight loss science. You know, there's these prominent kind of weight loss doctors who are literally preying on obese adolescents now. You know, there's a Canadian weight loss doctor who says, you know, if your kid is getting bullied, get them into our program now. Mm. There's only 75 spots left. And then if you look at the message from these obesity doctors, it's, oh, you know, you should taste the rainbow. And they literally have a picture of gummy bears in different colors. Okay. So they're preying on parents and their inability to understand obesity. And then they're offering a terrible, terrible message. You know, the same obesity doctor says, eat seven times a day, you know, eat seven times a day. You have to constantly eat if you want to lose weight. It's just bizarre, disproven, ideologic stances. And as long as your calories are controlled, you know, you'll be fine. You have to snack. Eat immediately upon waking up. This is the message. I mean,
yeah, it's crazy.
So at these conferences, they don't like me, and they've certainly expressed that criticism of me.
Yeah, and I don't get it. I mean, challenge is good, right? We should always challenge our current way of thinking, because how else do we evolve? How else do we change? You know, it's important to do that. It's important to keep testing what you think is right. I don't have a problem with someone getting something wrong. I have a problem with somebody not listening to new evidence or old evidence and actually, you know, re-looking at what they think is the right approach and testing it to make sure it is the right approach.
I mean, you're speaking to the choir.
So they should welcome your challenge, really, shouldn't they?
So we've taken up the challenge. They've said a ketogenic diet and intermittent fasting can't be used in eating disorders. They've said that if you have severely high triglycerides, the NLA guidelines say ketogenic diet is contraindicated. They say in the ADA guidelines that no diet composition works and that healthy eating patterns is what work and that the predominant issue for improving your diabetes is weight loss. And they've said you need to cut your saturated fat to reduce LDL. They've said these four things, and I'm going to show you how we've systematically dismantled each one. We did a case series in patients with obesity and food addiction and binge eating syndrome, and we gave them a ketogenic diet. And they literally reported decreasing in their binge eating symptoms, shown in published literature that a ketogenic diet with intermittent fasting, these are people who could not stop eating pizza and chocolate, actually improve their binge eating symptoms with a ketogenic diet and intermittent fasting, disproving that you can't do a restrictive diet in an eating disorder. We took the eating disorder, we improved their symptoms using this approach. Then when the National Lipid Association guidelines said that a ketogenic diet is contraindicated in severe hypertriglyceridemia, we took these patients. We said, can you do another approach? They said, no. And we said, great, we'll monitor you very closely and we'll try the ketogenic approach. We looked at the literature. We know that low-carb diets decrease triglycerides superiorly in meta-analysis, better than low-fat diets, even though that's the recommendation from the NLA. So we told these patients to do a low-carb diet. We tracked their blood lipid levels every week. So we took, on average, 1,000 triglyceride. I don't know if you guys use the same milligrams per deciliter. 1,000, which is insanely high.
Very.
Okay. And we literally brought it to under 200 in less than 6 weeks.
Wow.
With minimal weight loss. And we documented it every step of the way. And so we published this literature. It was wildly, it went wild on social media because we're challenging the guidelines. So whether they're ready or not, we're going to continue to challenge them. We have a paper coming. Okay. It's not been peer reviewed yet, but you know, we're going to submit it to peer review of an A1C reduction on average. Okay. The patients came in with an A1C of 11.9, and we reduced it to 6.7 in 4 months. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you guys use the same units, but
yeah, we do.
Imagine critically high and normal. And this is off medication. They were on insulin and metformin before. We took them off of insulin and metformin. And guess how much weight they lost in the 4 month time? 8 pounds. That's it on average. So we reversed their diabetes without significant weight loss. Without significant weight loss. So this is big because the American Diabetes Association says it's all about your calories and energy intake, and it's all about weight loss. With 8 measly pounds, we showed that we're able to reduce an A1C from 11.9 to 6.7, more powerful than any drug.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So you're proving, I was thinking, you know, I'm thinking in my head that people probably want higher weight loss, but that's another part of the conversation. But yes, I see your point. What you're proving is that you don't need the weight loss, that it's not all about the obesity. It's about what you're eating.
Yeah, they ended up losing weight later on, but the focus of this intervention was not weight loss.
Gotcha.
Was not weight loss.
Yeah.
And because why? Because the guidelines say any diet that works, as long as you cut your calories and lose weight. Wrong. It's wrong. And so we will challenge these guidelines. And then we have another paper we're working on that's going to be a bombshell. It's showing an LDL, about, you know, there's cholesterols, right? Mm-hmm. And the LDL is the bad actor for most cardiologists, from the standpoint of most cardiologists. We've shown a reduction of LDL over 100 points. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you're used to millimolars, this is like maybe 3 millimolars. If you're used to the milligrams per deciliter, over 100 points without reducing saturated fat. More potent than any drug that's on the market right now.
And without the nasty side effects.
Right. Over 100 point just by changing the dietary composition slightly. And so again, this hasn't been peer reviewed, but, and we will submit it for peer review. So, I mean, you're just going to have to trust what I'm saying for now. But those first two studies were submitted and published, challenging the eating disorder cautions, challenging the severe triglyceridemia cautions. And now we will challenge the ADA and the AHA because they deserve to be challenged and because they're wrong. Mm. I mean, not completely wrong, but they're not right. Mm. And they need more flexibility in their guidelines. So yeah, we are challenging them whether they like it or not. Nobody responded to me from the NLA, even though we called them out in our paper. It was widely, you know, spread throughout social media. Nobody contacted me from the NLA. National Lipid Association. So I who knows if they even read it.
Yeah, it's some people, some organizations just simply can't admit that they're wrong or don't want to face the fact they're wrong. I forever have the image of one of the first films I watched was Serial Killers, and the image of Tim Noakes at the beginning of that, literally just tearing pages out of his book, putting them in the bin and saying, I got it wrong. Nothing wrong with that. It's fine to have an approach, to have a belief about what you think you're doing is the best for your patients at the time, and then realize, because someone like you comes along and challenges them, that you got it wrong, you reassess everything. That's something that I respect. I don't care how wrong you got it, if you're prepared to admit that you're wrong. I always remember that image, and that he's the person I think of most with, you know, that kind of scenario.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, Tim Noakes is an amazing person. We've had him on our podcast for 100th episode. What he's done with the Nutrition Network and his education series, and what he's been through, what he struggles and what he represents, him and Gary Fedke are just people that, you know, they bore the cross, so to speak, mm-hmm. and people that I really have a lot of respect for. I've had the chance to interview him and talk with both of them, actually, I should say. And, you know, we're certainly going to be working together on some projects in this coming year. Just absolutely amazing people. And yeah, absolutely right. They, you know, in the case of Tim Noakes, I mean, he's like, I got this wrong, terribly wrong. You know, and he was talking about carbohydrates for years. So it was a tough pill for him to swallow, but he did the right thing and he was literally prosecuted for it. And the same thing with Fedke. He's like, I can't keep cutting off limbs. Mm. You know, Dr. Gary Fedke from Australia. I mean, he just said, I can't do this anymore. And then he opened his eyes to low carb and then they tried to take his license away. Mm. And they ultimately apologized. It was ultimately, you know, both of them after years of trials and tribulations.
Because they had to.
You know, it was turned down and, you know, some of these bad actors have now come to light that and what they've done and their interests, right? Their hidden interests have been revealed. But these people bore the cross and I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. I'm able to do these works specifically targeting these terrible, you know, ideologic dogma in the medical literature, okay, because of people like them who've given me somewhere to stand on. And I have to mention Eric Westman, who's absolutely been critical, and David Ludwig. These people, without them, I would have no voice and I would not be able to do half of the things that I'm doing right now. Mm. This is an amazing time to be involved in the low carb community, because not only are we making headway in the medical literature, but we're making there's a physicians organization and a healthcare practitioner organization that we've set up with Doug Reynolds from Low Carb USA, with Eric Westman, with Rob Sivas, and so many others that are all on the board with me, and Pam Devine. And we've set up the Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners, a not-for-profit specifically to bring together like-minded doctors on metabolic health. We're in the ADA guidelines now. Low carb is an accepted form of nutrition therapy for diabetics. So the medical field has cracked open to low carb. We're cracking that door wide open with our practice and other people and other practices as well. We have this organization that we've started that is going to be a linchpin to getting people certified in metabolic health and getting people together and networking and getting physicians and nurses and dietitians together and working together on research to advance the metabolic health in the community, just in the same way the plant-based community has done. And then the last key part here is the private sector loves low carb. Okay. Virta Health is a massive corporation valued at over $1 billion, who's reversing diabetes on a corporate level. Levels Health just got $12 million in a seed round of funding using a CGM to, basically help people see the effects of food on their glycemia and metabolic health. We have Primal Kitchen, which was bought out by, I think it was Kraft, for hundreds of million. So the private market is embracing low carb. So this is a truly an amazing time to be involved. You know, the groundbreaking studies coming out from Dr. David Ludwig showing what low carb does to metabolism, increasing the metabolic rate and total energy expenditure. This is truly, truly interesting times. I think it's exciting times, exciting times.
A lot has changed, actually. Just over the last few years, not that it felt hopeless, but it seemed like it was just going to take forever to change. you know, that ship has really started turning now. It really feels like there's no going back now. Things really are going to start changing, and quite possibly at, you know, an ever increasing rate.
Yeah. And I think a key part of that is to also look at the, you know, it's not low carb for everybody, and it's not low carb has no issues, you know, and that's one of the key points of looking at these people that Dave Feldman is doing who have a response to their cholesterol that goes way up high, you know, these hyper responders. If you look at all people doing low carb, after about 1 or 2 years, everybody's got about the same LDL. The HDL seems to rise up, the good cholesterol rises up, but the LDL, some people lower, some people go up, but the overall is maybe a slight increase in LDL. Triglycerides seem to drop very clearly. HDL seems to go up very clearly, but LDL is like this mixed bag. And there are some people whose LDL rises kind of alarmingly, right? Alarmingly for most clinicians who aren't used to seeing that. And it's so important we look at these people and say, okay, are you truly at risk? You know, what are the underlying issues that are driving this? And if you approach those people dogmatically and say, you have to increase your fiber and decrease saturated fat, I'll tell you, you will not be happy with the results you'll get. We've seen it in our practice. It won't have a significant impact. In fact, we found that adding back some carbohydrates in those people actually seems to lower the LDL most potently. And so if we have to take those people that seem to be a potential risk, who are, whose bad cholesterol is going through the roof, and actually look at their hearts and look at their carotid arteries and see, you know, what is going on? Are you really at risk here? Is there signs of cholesterol deposition in your arteries? And if there is, you know, maybe reversing course. And if there isn't, telling them, look, you're in no man's land right now. We don't know what's going to happen to you. And some people say, well, I don't care. I feel great eating like this. And some people say, I don't want to take that risk. Mm-hmm. And so we have to understand, you know, what is going on in these people. If we're going to go mainstream, we have to be able to critically look at low carb the way that the conventional, like right now, we have several people in our practice with sky high LDLs whose doctors have said, I can't see you anymore because these LDLs are so high. I don't even know what to do with it. And you need to go on a medication right now. And the patients are scared. They're like, they don't like that response. They don't like the fear. They don't like that. They just want to talk it out and understand it and understand why and understand what's going on. So if you are one of these mainstream doctors looking in, right? Keto causes this massive increase in LDL. You should never do it. Right. So if we really want to break into the mainstream, we should understand that process really well. And Dave Feldman has worked on that. And we should understand who maybe who should lower their LDL and who maybe has a little bit of leeway and what is the best way to lower that LDL if you decide you need to do it. And as it stands, you know, we've brought some of our data to the top cardiologists in the world showing LDLs that are going from 700 down to under 200. And point blank have asked them, have you ever seen a drug that can do this? And they've said no. And they're like, how did you do it? Right?
Yeah, show them the data first and then tell them.
How did you do it? They asked us. And I told them, you'll find out. We'll publish it. I mean, we've basically said it here. But when I approached these doctors, I pulled about 20 of them. One of them asked, how did you do this? One of them.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, that's what we're dealing with. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's a fun, interesting time to be in medicine and low carb, and there's many great things to come.
And you touched upon very briefly, but I'm really interested to hear about your story.
Well, which story?
Well, I guess how you mentioned that you used to be overweight, obese yourself, that you could break any diet. So you've obviously, like a lot of us, probably tried all sorts of different ways to try and lose weight in the past. And, you know, people usually have a story about how they first found out about keto or low carb. So really just that, you know, where you were at, what inspired the change and, you know, the personal changes you've seen, you know, how I assume it impacted the work you do as well. Did that, was there a, you know, a trajectory, a change for that too?
I mean, how far back do you want to go? I mean, let's start 8 years old, you know, obese, all the way up to, I had a bit reprieve in high school where I want to say I was, you know, I basically didn't eat for about 3 weeks, then ran cross country and ate a plant-based diet for a year, killed my body, gained all the weight back. In college and then in med school was back to being obese. And then throughout residency.
Was this down to purely lifestyle choices? You know, with, you've got the benefit of hindsight. Is there a genetic element to that as well? You know, what led to that obesity in the first place?
Well, I blame modern processed food and bad advice. That's to blame. Mm. Okay. Modern food and bad advice, right? Not having insight into what's going on. There was a nickname my cousins would have for me growing up, and it was called vacuum cleaner. Okay. Because even when I had this bit of reprieve of not being obese, because I was starving myself and being vegan, and they made a joke that I could just turn on the switch and eat everything in sight. So at a young age, I had an unrelenting appetite and no real insight as to why, how, to the point where, you know, my cousins had a joke about it, about how much I could eat. Why? I mean, yeah, if you look at my entire family, my older brother's obese, lost a ton of weight now. My younger brother's obese, lost a ton of weight now. My mom and father were both obese and since lost weight. But yeah, I mean, we're basically, you take somebody who is, I guess, you know, minimally predisposed and you give them modern food and what happens, you know? Mm. You could have put me in a dumpster in New York City and I probably would have been obese, like the raccoons that I mentioned when I first started. So it's in a prison of obesity. I grew up in a prison of obesity with terrible advice that blamed me, that shamed me. And I found myself in med school, college, med school, residency, board certified internist, wildly obese. And finally, it came to a point where my wife, who loves me and cares for me, said, she knows how to play me. She knows how arrogant I am. And, you know, she said, maybe arrogant's not the right word, but easily triggered is probably the better word, but, or a combination of the two. And she said, you're a smart doctor. You scored on the 90th percentile in your board exam. You know, you're hyper-focused on evidence-based medicine. What does the evidence say about obesity? Why can't you figure this out? And she knew exactly what to say. I mean, she knew what to do. And that's when I went to the medical literature. I'm like, okay, what would I do if this was pneumonia and I was picking an antibiotic? I'd go look at the trials. I'd look at what was the outcome. So I read the literature. And I read probably 2,000 original articles. I mean, I must have read for about a year. I read 300 books on diet from various doctors of all sorts. I read 3 textbooks on obesity. And then I remember I started to diet. And I remember this very clearly. So I told my wife, I'm going to lose weight. I have a clear vision of what I'm going to do now. And we go to a restaurant and the maitre d' comes to take my wife's order. And she orders whatever, a salad and I order 2 filet mignons and 2 skewers of shrimp.
Nice.
Right? And I swear to God, the maitre d's jaw drops at me and, like, you know, probably thinking, this guy's wildly obese. What are you doing ordering like this? Right? And my wife turns to me and says, Tro, you know, I thought you were dieting and losing weight. And so, I ordered that. And I knew in my mind what it would take to not eat the bread on the table. I needed the shrimp, you know, I knew what it would take not to eat the potatoes and the dessert. It was 2 orders of filet. And, I had a very clear vision of what I needed to do. And I didn't give a shit about, excuse my language, about the maitre d'. And I didn't give a, like, my wife supports me, but she doesn't know what I need. Like, she doesn't have an unruly appetite. She doesn't know, like, she's not doing the accrual accounting. She's looking at the budgeting. She's like, oh my God, you're eating so much right here. But in fact, if you look at what happens over the next 8 hours to days, if I stay low carb and ketogenic, I certainly am not eating when we get home, and I'm certainly not eating the next morning, right? Because I have lasting fullness and satiety. So that's how it started. You know, going to literature saying which drug works better, right? Or which, in this case, which diet works better. And low carb always works better. Always. Not in one case for weight loss have I found any compelling evidence that a low fat or calorie restricted diet does better.
And did that then start having a roll-on effect on, you know, how you approach treating your patients? Or did the path you were taking with what you were doing career-wise change at that point completely?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of things going on. I was getting burned out. I was like, you know, I was in a, enough was enough. I wanted to take care of my own life. And then once you see how to help yourself, and you understand kind of appetite, hunger, food addiction, you know, cravings. Once you understand these things and you see it, it's kind of like seeing the Matrix, right? You just see the system of controls. That's the best way I can describe it, is like once you see the system of control and you just see it again and again, every patient that walks in, it's like the same thing. Like you see, you know, if you look, remember the Matrix with all these little, you know, green things flashing out, you see the code, you know, it's the same themes again and again. Unruly appetite, bad advice, metabolic dysfunction, intense cravings, high stress, poor planning, black and white thinking, blame yourself, shame, guilt, you know, it's just like, and crap food, no stress release. I mean, it's like the same. I'm so tired of seeing the same thing. I'm so tired, you know, of seeing the same thing again and again. Childhood adversity. Childhood adversity, like 80% of the time. So, yeah, once you see this, it's like, you know, how can you go back? How can I go back? And, well, certainly, to some extent, life kind of pushes you in a way, like once you lose 150 pounds, right? And you go from looking like, you know, an obese, you know, a patient with obesity to like a six pack, right? Everybody wants to know what's the secret, you know? So to some extent, I'm triggered to support people in this way because that's, they're looking for the answers, right? So yeah, certainly I can't go back. And now it's been like 6 years or 7 years that I've maintained this weight loss. And I can't practice in a way that's like, I can't ignore what I just learned. You know, I can't ignore what I see as this crystal clear. And everybody else is like, I call it ostrich medicine. They're practicing ostrich medicine. They don't want to know.
And why would you advise your patients something different from what you found is working so well?
No, I mean, we certainly, if there is something that works really, really well, you know, I'll evaluate it. Like we have people here who are vegetarian, people who are plant-based, and we still support them because there's tenets of any diet you can take and learn from. And I'd like, so yes, you know, I have a low carb MD podcast, you know, yes, I lost weight with a low carb and ketogenic and intermittent fasting approach, but we will do whatever works. I mean, there's times where, you know, I have a chocolate protein shake, right? I mean, I don't really advise shakes regularly, but well, maybe if you can't stop eating ice cream and chocolate, you know, milkshakes, just make yourself a protein shake. It's low carb, but so we do support shakes, right? And people ask us, you know, well, how do you feel about vegetables? Like, do you need to be, you know, if you're low carb and eating a steak, do you need to be slathering a ton of butter on your vegetables? You know, or adding butter to your ribeye steak, which is also very fatty. And yeah, so we kind of believe in low fat too then, right? Because we don't necessarily believe you should be adding fat to everything, you know, at least not eventually, you know, in the beginning, certainly we are very liberal with fat. But so all of a sudden we're also pro shake, we're also low fat in a way. And we are also, you know, we have no issues with vegetables unless you have an intolerance. So we're whole food plant-based. So So we are really inclusive, but we understand how each one of these has a different physiologic impact. And we understand how each one of these has pitfalls in and of themselves. So, we are very supportive of low carb approaches because they work and they work better. But we know that other tweaks can work too.
It's all about tailoring approaches to fit the individual, isn't it? Rather than trying to make an individual fit a particular approach. That's what that's always my philosophy is, what works for you? It's all about making it work for you rather than the other way around, trying to squeeze yourself into a set format that might not suit you.
Yeah. Look, from the flip side, we know how to make low carb diets happen. We know all the tricks, we know all the replacement foods, the foods that people can't give up, the chips, the pizza, the chocolate, the ice cream. We know how to get you started. And we know we're available to people. We literally, our office is text enabled, email enabled. We tell people if your appetite's unruly, just call us, just text us. We'll pick up the phone. Amy will pick up the phone, Brian will pick up the phone. So we understand that the cravings and compulsions are real. And so, I feel like I don't think there's a person I've met that can't do a low carb diet, right? We'll make it happen. We'll create the systems you need to make it happen.
Mm. Right. That's right. That's what I mean about tailoring.
Yeah. I feel like, yes, we absolutely take an individual approach, but even that's kind of like kumbaya. A lot of people say that, right? Everybody says that, right? No diet works. It's an individual approach, right? But there are, if you take somebody like Brian, who's got 12 years of keeping low carb, he's going to know more than most people on how to keep low carb. Mm-hmm. So, I think, yes, you tailor it to the individual patient, but there are common things that just make it easier.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense,
No, absolutely. Like with most things, it's somewhere in the middle. What I mean is that it's not, I've seen so often in the keto community that someone has a fixed idea. For example, with keto, same thing can be said with low carb, same thing can be said with vegan, with all sorts of things. A very set approach, a strict list of things you can eat, a strict list of things you can't, and just very, very dogmatic. That's what I rail against. I'm not saying that there aren't, lots of common themes and common ways to make it work. It's just not that there's not one approach. Like, this is exactly how much protein you need. This is exactly how much fat. And this is exactly how much carbohydrates. For example, we're all different. And although there are common themes, there are just different ways to make it work better for the individual. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, look, absolutely. Here's the thing. A lot of it, it's not only about being individual, but the individual usually is not a good judge of themselves. So we'll have people who, for example, would eat pizza until it hurts. And then they ate low carb pizza and they always feel bad about themselves for eating pizza. And now they're eating low carb pizza and they had three slices and they were ridiculously full. They couldn't eat anymore. And they would come in all sulky and say, I just had low carb pizza. I feel really bad. I cheated. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, okay, well, let's reevaluate. What happens when you have regular pizza? Well, I eat four slices. I feel disgusted with myself. 4 hours later, I'm hungry again and the cold pizza tastes better than when I was eating it before. Well, yeah, if you're on the blood sugar roller coaster, of course, that's what's going to happen. Well, what happened this time? I had low carb pizza. It tasted great. I felt bad about myself. And were you hungry 4 hours later? No, not really. And when you woke up the next morning, were you hungry? No, I wasn't. So it's these kind of things where I think people are just, especially who've struggled with obesity for a long time, they're terrible judges of themselves, right? And so one of the benefits of working with a coach is, wait a second, stop. That's actually, you're winning. You need to reinforce that.
Cause for celebration, yeah. Right?
And the problem is a lot of times the world doesn't give us that feedback, that proper feedback. If you go back to the story of me and my wife, you know, I told my wife I'm going to diet, and then I ordered 2 filet mignon and 2 skewers of shrimp. Now, if she knew anything about me, like now that she knew then, right, she would have been championing me in that moment, saying, awesome job. And that maitre d' would have said, yeah, you're on your path, right? But, you know, instead there was this social pressure and there was this negative feedback, right? So when you go, like, so Christmas is going to happen. Everybody's going to go to their parents' house or whatever. I don't know. It's COVID. Maybe not. And what's mom going to say? Mom's going to say, you've gained weight. And then when you go to fast, she's going to say, why aren't you eating? Right? So what happens is our signals when it comes to food, dieting, and our internal signals and our external stimulus, it's all sort of wrong. How many times have you gone to a social gathering, ate just the meat, or fasted, and somebody said, nice job, nice work, right? Nobody does that. In fact, they're like, why are you doing that? Just have a little bit. You could try a little bit. Don't worry about it. Leave your diet. Like, it's okay. Are you still doing that? Right? The problem is that the individual is not a good judge of themselves, and the feedback they get from the world is usually not encouraging them on their path. So I think having a coach or having somebody intimately involved to go over kind of the hunger and the signals and go over these issues, I think that's really important.
Give you the right feedback.
Yeah, because there's some people, like for me, if I eat low carb pizza, that's not where I'm at in my journey. That's not like, if I do that every day, I won't reach my body composition goals. But when I first started, if I did that, that was like a huge win, right? So the same tool or the same food or the same, you know, there is no like health food. It's how you use it. You know, it's what did it replace? What is it replacing? So I think in that sense, it needs to be individual, because and the individuals usually, and the world around us, they're not good judges of that. In fact, they're usually bad judges of that. So I believe in the individual approach. It's actually absolutely needed. I just have such hesitation with that, those words, because all these doctors who I really despise for their terrible advice.
I've inadvertently triggered you.
Yeah, they all claim that they're doing it, you know, and meanwhile, they say calories are all that count.
Yeah, we obviously, have a different reaction to that phrase. Well, you've touched on the different services you offer and all the resources you have, and we'll put all the links in the show notes, but perhaps you could quickly tell people where to find you, where to find the, I know you have a wonderful blog and a podcast. Just tell us where we can find all those things.
Social media, Dr. Tro, so DocTorTro, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, probably the most active on Twitter. DrTro.com. You can get a hold of us and you can just text our office right through the website. We can chat with you that way. We have health coaches. We have a group coaching program that's just phenomenal. Basically meeting every week and going over, you know, just key issues with diet and nutrition, bringing on guests, talking to people who are struggling, sharing our struggles and our strengths and our trials and tribulations. And you'd work with Amy or Brian when you join that program. So we have just a lot of resources. We have free resources. As you said, we have a blog on our website. It's got tons of great info. We have a free podcast, you know, the Low Carb MD podcast, where we basically bring you all the insights we have in a way that, you know, no commercial interests. There's nobody funding it. We don't have any commercials because we don't want people to say that it's influencing us. I mean, it's just two doctors, not giving any medical advice, but talking about medicine, nutrition, life. And we have experts, we have patients, sometimes it's just us. And so if you can't afford me, certainly, you know, which a lot of people say they can, and that's fine. You know, we have free resources. We have a free Facebook group. We have really ways of reaching you. And probably this next year, we're going to be offering free services to needy patients who can apply. So people who can't afford us will be opening it up. So we have some spots that people could just apply if they need the kind of help that we offer and they're under economic hardship, that they don't have to go it alone. So that's something that we're working on. And that's pretty much it.
Fantastic.
We're excited about things to come in the new year. I mean, we're booked out right now for several months. So if you need us, you know, please just, you can start that conversation. We'll get you started with some material early on, but we need more people. We need more doctors. So if you're a doctor listening and you want to join the ranks, you know, certainly I think that's, it's time to do that.
Fabulous. Well, we round up the podcast with a top tip. So what have you got for us?
Eat low carb. we have two top tips, I think, that we really talk to people about. We tell them eating low carb is an appetite suppression tool. Intermittent fasting is a weight loss tool. And as long as you have that in mind, right? So eating low carb is not a necessarily a weight loss tool. It's a way to suppress your appetite in a way that doesn't make you more hungry. Okay. That's what eating low carb is. That's what a low carb eating is, right? It's sometimes it's a weight loss diet, not necessarily. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the intermittent fasting is the primary weight loss tool, right? The primary weight loss engine, the time restricted feeding and the intermittent fasting. So, if you have that way of looking at it, you're hungry, eat low carb. Not hungry, don't eat. That's the tip.
Sounds good.
It's a pleasure being here.
Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure talking to you today. I know how busy you are, so I shall let you get on to your next meeting. Thank you, Dr. Cho.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman. Or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman Podcast Instagram and Facebook pages and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Mark and Angel Chernoff. Stop believing that you should be more confident before you take the next step. Taking the next step is what builds your confidence. Bye-bye, Keto Lovelies.